It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 540, April the 11th, 1982. Before we get started on the news of the week, I have two apologies. One for the throat last week. I couldn't help it. It was pretty bad. It's the condition's over now. I had a cold, and you were patient with me. It's pretty bad on the tapes, too. I'm sure if you play it back. Also, the second half of the broadcast that I did on the murder of John Belushi, that's tape number 537. Those of you who subscribe to the tapes, it did not record well. So if you haven't returned it, mail it back to me, and I'll be doing another half hour on the murder of John Belushi and get that out to you in the mail this week. For those who get it on the broadcast, it comes over fine. But the tape cassette, we had trouble making that tape cassette. Now I will get right into the matter of the Falkland Islands, because that's what I expect most of you want me to talk about this evening, and to give an educated guess on what I think is happening down there. Just one moment before I get into that, I want to mention the Israelis at the border of Lebanon. We hear the stories, an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, but if an Israeli diplomat is killed in Paris and two Israelis are murdered on the border of the Israeli-occupied territory, I don't think that justifies 40,000 Israeli troops arming along the border of Lebanon. We hear the stories, an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, but if an Israeli diplomat is killed in Paris and two Israelis are murdered on the border of the Israeli-occupied territory, I don't think that justifies 40,000 Israeli troops arming along the border of Lebanon. A lot of people think sometimes I'm too patient with Israel, but those that have listened for a long time know that I am very disgusted with that country, and I have no patience at all. I can't see putting 40,000 people on the border of a country to wage war because three members of their country were murdered. It's just outright ridiculous. And furthermore, the invasion plans to go into Lebanon have to be agreed upon by the United States, the Defense Department, Secretary of Defense, and so forth. Remember, several weeks ago on this program, I read a memo that under the table they would give Israel the green light, such as they did to bomb the atomic plant in Iraq. There's no way that a small country like that would take on Lebanon and the Middle East at this time unless this was simultaneous with things that are going on at other parts of the world. I'm not sure what they are or why they're doing this. My worst fear is that at this time, while Great Britain is fighting Argentina down in the Falkland Islands and Israel is going into Lebanon, that maybe South Africa may decide to walk right into Angola, and we'd have a border of countries moving into territory they've wanted to do for a long time, leaving the United States totally defenseless to interrupt any of the Anschluss, similar to the way that Hitler took countries during World War II when that war broke out. Now, the pictures in the newspaper of the Falkland Island episode, the coverage of Alexander Haig is outrageous. In one photograph, he's here holding hands with Margaret Thatcher, and he's smiling from ear to ear. I've referred to Reichstag Haig, the warmonger Haig, the Nazi Haig, the man who'd get us in World War III Haig, and this guy really is happy now. I mean, he looks like he's going to a wedding. He's never been happier. He wants to be commander-in-chief and lead us into this holy war that he's been building up ever since he got out of West Point and joined General Douglas MacArthur down in Korea. He married the daughter of the head of the military who was stationed at Taiwan. And I've done a biography of Haig from time to time and his position. And whenever he's on a peace mission, you can be sure that what is left behind is a bloodbath. Another picture of Secretary Haig discussing the Argentine problem with the president of Argentina. He flies down there ear-to-ear smile. They're just as jovial, the two of them. It's a big joke on us, and they are smiling. He is smiling, and there's no serious business about the consequences of the kinds of actions that might take place. Another article, Haig's Mission-Peace in the Falklands. Well, he had a finger in the South Korean War. He didn't leave peace there. As an article in New York Times this week, that the South Koreans hate the United States. There's anti-United States feeling identical to Iran. We left the masses in a form of slavery. The president of Korea, South Korea, was shot, and the new president who took over was at the same dinner party assisting in his murder. We left a military dictatorship in Korea. He then went on to Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos with the acid rains, the napalm, the mutilations, the Phoenix Program, the displacement of villages and lives destroyed, the beginning of mass importation of drugs, narcotics, opening up into the United States. The CIA heroin connections began to pour in after we opened the Southeast Asian War. Haig was big part of that, too, with Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon, with that going on. And then, of course, Haig and the Rockefeller clan, the Chase Manhattan, and Henry Kissinger and his Fritz Kramer crowd over in Iran with the Shah of Iran and the notorious Savak. And what happened when that country got so bad that nobody could stand them, the middle class, not the communists or the poor? They turned that entire country over to Khomeini and the Muslims, and it began a strong bond of Muslims in the Middle East. The blundering of what we did in the Middle East accomplished what the Grand Mufti and Hitler would always want, turning these countries over to the Muslims. And Haig had a finger, of course, in bungling the whole thing, including the hostages and bringing the Shah to this country. And then as soon as Ronald Reagan was president, he wanted to encircle Cuba and have Cuba be attacked by the United States. He had his finger in Central America, in the bloodbath of El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala. And now he's down in South America, the hotbed and home of the Nazis, of his mentor, and Kissinger's mentor, Fritz Kramer, of the Pentagon. And I've done broadcasts and will do more on them. Alexander Haig has a path that doesn't lead to peace. So when you see him smiling in England and you see him smiling in Argentina, what he's smiling about is the power that he has. It has nothing to do with you or me or our safety. A friend or person that I met just yesterday was at my home. He was in Washington testifying last week, just this last week, on the Abscam matter, and I'll go into more of that next week. He said that Pentagon is geared for war, and they say one-third of the American citizens will survive. They accept that figure, that one-third will survive. Anybody who's been to Washington recently, and I've heard this from two other people, it is a warfare state taken over by Haig and the Pentagon, the National Security Council, defense intelligence agencies. They want a war, and we are going to be brought into it one way or the other. Ever since Haig has been with Ronald Reagan, he would have had a war against Libya when those planes were shot down. When Sadat was killed, he would have us in war in the Sudan. And every week I run down the wars, they would have us go into Poland and fight Russia, or Central America. But now there's a situation that has been brewing for a long, long time, and I'm going into the history down there and the predictions of Admiral Byrd in 1946 and 1947 that World War III would start down in Antarctica by the Falkland Islands with Argentina, Antarctica, and in that area. He knew and said in a press conference, two press conferences in Santiago, Chile, in March of 1947, again in July 1947, that World War III would be set off down in that area. Well, when Admiral Byrd got home, he was met by James Forrestal, the Secretary of Defense, and I'll do more of that later in the broadcast. 2 years later, Forrestal was murdered, thrown out of a window at Bethesda Hospital 2 months after he got a Distinguished Medal from Eisenhower. Forrestal was with Admiral Byrd on consultations. Byrd went down to see if Eisenhower and the Russians were correct that Adolf Hitler was down in Antarctica building secret weapons and so forth. All of the papers of Admiral Byrd are locked up, top secret, to this day. They're not available of what he saw. And right after he was met by Forrestal, shortly after that, Forrestal was murdered. And I'll give you the references on some of the books on the death of Forrestal and the meeting with Admiral Byrd. Now, to understand where Alexander Haig is coming from, or our Pentagon, that breaks us apart and is bankrupting this country by demanding weapons, demanding things we can't afford or our allies can't afford, These people are destroying the United States, and they've been hell-bent on that since the end of World War II. They will break the British Empire financially and economically also. They will pit us against our allies, such as Britain and other allies to come. They will support, these people eventually will support, a South American bloodbath. They put Salvador Allende out of office and put Pinochet in office. Our ambassador to the UN, Jean Kirkpatrick, was very busy as soon as Reagan was in office, traveling to South Africa, Chile, and Argentina. And the things that the United States government wanted the most with William Buckley and the State Department was to build up and support Argentina. Forget about the missing people. Forget about the tortures. And they're still going on, and the murders are still going on in Chile and Argentina. These people were traveling back and forth, send money to them. In fact, we renewed our naval activities with Argentina recently. Now, the Falkland Island controversy has been going on against Britain for a long time. So instead of asking them to settle that before we shared Navy battles or simulated battles with Argentine, we did all that. The United States Navy, Jimmy Carter, when he was president, didn't want to deal with Chile or Argentine under these circumstances. And the first thing that happened when Ronald Reagan came in with Alexander Haig and Caspar Weinberger and the group from the Hoover Institute and the Pentagon establishment that was there before was to recognize and encourage these people. Now, Jean Kirkpatrick was at the embassy, the Argentine guest. She was the guest of the Argentine officials the night that they took over the Falkland Islands from Great Britain. She was asked on national television about the controversy here, her opinion. She said, well, at the UN, we voted one way, but in the evening they socialize, and that it had nothing to do with the dinner party that was set weeks ahead. Well, you could always pick up a telephone and decline and really stay neutral, but she was dining with the Argentine people, identical to the night that two fellows were let out of prison who were part of the murder of Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C., on Embassy Row. And those fellows were released from prison, and the night they were out, William French Smith was having dinner with the Chilean embassy. These people are telling you through their actions what they think is happening, and you don't have to listen to their answers on these programs. Watch who they see and where they go, and it's very important to know where she was eating dinner the night that our ally, Great Britain, was kicked out of the islands. Now, I'm very harsh on Haig, I am, but I've studied this history, and in order to understand the Falkland Islands, again, and the Antarctica story, you have to go back to 1937 and 1939. That may be too far for some people to try and go back, but I'm going to read some pages from a book, and I have a lot of files and articles on Antarctica and on these bases. But one book in particular that I've mentioned before on these broadcasts, it's called UFOs, Nazi Secret Weapon, published by Samizdat Publishers in Toronto, Canada. Now, many of the longtime researchers own this book, and they have a series of publications that come out of Canada. This is a pro-German Nazi publication out of Canada, and they have books and brochures and tape cassettes that come out all the time. But I want to directly read from this book because it's so pertinent, and those of you who have this book just have to bear with me because there's many who listen to the radio broadcast who don't have it, and if you're interested and want to send for it, I'll give you the address. Just pertaining to that area, on page 86 and 87, it talks about, first of all, the Guinness Book of Records at the end of World War II. The greatest unsolved robbery was at the end of the war when the Reichsbank treasury was emptied of all its money, and the bank vaults in Berlin were completely emptied out, and the headquarters for the World Monetary Fund in Basel, Switzerland, found that they had $15 billion in circulation that shouldn't exist. There was forged money. The code name was Operation Bernhardt. There were expert forgers. And so that this is the kind of money that could finance the operations that they're describing in this book. The prelude to the operations was that the money was available and somebody was making the equipment for these people that this book is writing about and manufacturing secret weapons for the future. Now, this book claims that Hitler planned far ahead to have a colony down in Antarctica. And if you buy the maps put out by National Geographic, 1957, there's a map of Hitler staking in 1939, 1937, his territory in Antarctica. He sent polar expeditions out. This book says the secret Nazi expeditionary force was headed by Kapitän Reischer, R-I-T-S-C-H-E-R, and took place 1937 and 38, their first expeditions. They landed in the Queen Maud Land and established bases there. They took over 11,000 photographs for map purposes and had a swastika flag dropped every 20 kilometers to substantiate the German claim that they had this land in Antarctica. It was a terrain claimed by Germany itself for the first time, and they found warm lakes, an ice-free oasis, and an area, an unexplored area before, that they gave German names, the mountains and the plateaus and so forth. It was free of ice, and there were warm lakes in this area, and other books that I have show the drawings. Now, added to the credence to these bases are the remarks of Mr. von Ribbentrop, this book says, at the outbreak of the war, World War II, in accordance with Germany's long-range political strategy, we have taken into firm possession the Antarctic area called the New Swabia, and it will be and ensure a safe retreat in case of necessity, Mr. Ribbentrop said at the beginning of World War II. And this book has maps of the Byrd expedition going down after the war. They said Antarctica would be an ideal place for bases. There was no rust, no germs, no illnesses or decomposition, no bacillus, no flies, no bugs, and not even a common cold would survive. It would be a perfect place to live. And they show the food and the trays for somebody like Adolf Hitler, who was a vegetarian. Now, this book shows in January 1947 pictures that Admiral Byrd took of headquarters at Antarctica. Now, this book asks the question, how could all this have taken place in the 20th century without detection? Hardly, they say. What steps were taken to discover the truth? What has been done about the secret bases, about their existence? Why did the world not hear about these incredible events? Obviously, Hitler's escape was soon discovered by others. There were statements of Stalin and Eisenhower and quoted sources, and they speculate the Nuremberg trial was staged as to show that they had surrounded and rounded up these particular Nazis. Washington, Moscow, and London decided that they had to go down to Antarctica to investigate what was happening. So they used the excuse of scientific work and set up a large expedition with 4,000 specially selected elite United States Navy troops with an 8-month food supply, 13 ships under the control of Admiral Byrd, to make, in quotes, a scientific expedition composed of military types and no scientists. The U.S. Antarctic Battle Fleet left Norfolk, Virginia, December the 2nd, 1946, as battle groups in England and Norway also sent forces down. Churchill, and this is a statement of Winston Churchill, and this comes in later to the UFOs and the bases and the confusion of UFOs that have continued since. Churchill at that time spoke of the Iron Curtain in 1946-47. He said, in quotes, the Crusaders in Europe, this is a quote, killed the wrong pig, end quote. Churchill realized they should have destroyed Bolshevik Russia and not Germany. The general public was told that this was a research mission to locate uranium and to study the weather. Admiral Byrd undertook this with the armed observation camps that were set up because the pole, the South Pole, lies between us and our enemies. And they considered in 1947 the enemies, Germany and the Nazis, that had gone down there during the war and after the war, and that they would be trouble later, and they wanted to find out. These were continuous enemies because they didn't believe the war was over and they went down there. Further questioning as to who the enemy was asked July 7th in San Diego, Chile, of Admiral Byrd, in quotations from El Mercurio, a newspaper down there. And he said the Axis powers had been only defeated and had unconditionally surrendered, but he really realized that they would rise again, and he had an interview in the paper in San Diego, Chile. It was soon learned that the scientific job, the mission, the task of observing the activities of the foreign power, Nazi Germany, in the South Pole region, was part of the activity that Admiral Byrd reported back. He wanted, in quotes, to break the last desperate resistance of Adolf Hitler. In case we find him inside his new Schwabenland in the Queen Maud Land region, we will destroy him. And there were Spanish books out at the time, Hitler Está Vivo. The United States expedition arrived and landed in Antarctica, and with them the latest in military gear and gadgets. So you see, it was a warfare military operation at that time. This isn't new to the United States or Great Britain. Bases were established and quickly expanded. Now, after they set up their bases and set up their equipment, the instruments went totally haywire. The performance gauges, the altimeters behaved in a most erratic manner, causing Admiral Byrd to abort the flight and return to his base on visual controls. The altimeters weren't working, and he couldn't fly airplanes over there. It has been reported by papers and sources previously mentioned here that Admiral Byrd had located the secret Nazi base and was approaching it when an incident took place and he had to abandon the flight and some of his planes went down. He saw duplicated and was warned about Hitler being there and a new Burster's Garden called Hitler's Shangri-La. Now, it says that 48 hours after he located some of these bases, four of Admiral Byrd's planes were lost, some without a trace, others without any survivors. Admiral Byrd hastily abandoned all his efforts and disembarked all his force and came home. On board his flagship, the Olympus, he gave the following interview, translated in Spanish. This is March the 5th in Chile, 1947. It was the front page of the newspapers, and Admiral Byrd was talking about what he saw down there. In quotes, Admiral Byrd declared today it was imperative for the United States to initiate immediate defense measures against hostile regions. Now, he assumed that what was going on down there was hostile, but the reason he was silenced and Forrestal was murdered was because the United States had the intent with Reinhard Gehlen, with the Hitlers after Hitler's agents after the war, and the Fritz Kramers and the Nazis that got out, to continue the operations down there and not to stop them. He thought this was hostile region. The planes weren't working, the altimeters weren't working, the planes were going down. The admiral, further stated he didn't want to frighten anyone unduly, because it was the bitter reality that in case of a new war, the continental United States would be attacked by flying objects which could fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds. Admiral Byrd repeated the above point of view resulting from his personal knowledge gathered from the North and South Pole that he could have, he said, at a news service, an international news service. During the press conference, the admiral stated that in a quickly shrinking world, the United States could no longer derive any sense of security from its isolation or the geographic distance from the poles. The admiral affirmed once again his belief that the entire Antarctic continent should be closely watched and surrounded by a wall of defense installations, since it represented the last line of defense for America. These defense measures, the book goes on to say, have been taken, but we have not had the defense down there, nor has Great Britain, on those islands while Antarctica and Argentina could build up whatever they want. He warned about this. Admiral Byrd further stated, no one could give a more accurate accounting of the true significance of the situation than he could, since he was there. When Admiral Byrd arrived in the United States and the significance of his findings found their way into the press, he was hospitalized. Now, how often have you seen that happen since 1946-47? No hard information since that time was ever unearthed, since he was interviewed in San Diego, Chile, and the newspapers and the press conferences there. When he got home, Byrd was hospitalized. No information came out after that. It seems that his frank statements to the press in South America on board the Olympus were not appreciated by the powers that be in Washington. Now, keep in mind, in 1946, 1947, that Hitler's chief of intelligence was in Washington in the Pentagon setting up the National Security Council, the National Security Agency, the CIA. We didn't have until it was formally inaugurated in 1947, but those years from 45 to 47, top Nazis from Germany were in the United States Pentagon making the plans for the future. Now, what is the future? The future is what you will see in tomorrow's headlines or what you read today. That is the future. That is now. This book says when he was the first victim of a long string of prominent people removed from circulation. Now, these authors knew that he was the first of a long string. I'm sure he wasn't the first, and I know he wasn't the last, but I have said that many people have been hospitalized, have been caused, in quotes, their suicides, have been murdered, who had any inkling to catch on to these long-made plans that literally were traitors taking over America to continue what Churchill thought should have been done, fighting the Soviet Union at any sacrifice so that eventually our country is worthless in terms of what we're doing to our people here, and we've been geared to this war machine for this long, long time. This book states that for their honest belief in the unidentified flying objects and the fast speeds that could go from pole to pole, people like Admiral Byrd were put in the hospital. Now, in conclusion, I'm not going to read much of this book. I'm just going to read 7 points of conclusion because it's a whole book on this subject and the Allies and how they sent Byrd down there and wondered if Hitler and the top, they knew many top Nazis were in Argentina, and many, of course, went down after 1946 and 47 and are working in all the South American countries. This book had several conclusions on the points that I just mentioned, and they were the following. Many definite and important conclusions can be drawn from the reporting that took place. One, the final outcome of World War II is yet to be decided. That is borne out by the late general and former President Eisenhower. He said the Second World War has not yet ended, and it was corroborated by Admiral Byrd's alarming phrase that in case of a new war, Hitler's last battalion is waiting for its golden opportunity to tip the scale in the conflagrations to come. Secondly, the over 40 small wars since 1945, including Korea and Vietnam, of which Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer were a part, and Reinhard Gehlen, were supposed to provoke a premature showing of hands by the last battalion. But they, again, came along these last 44 small wars to bring us into a total debt that we never will be able to pay. Third, Hitler has defended that secret lair as successfully against Byrd as his numerous headquarters in Europe. Byrd was forced to retreat and to acknowledge the superiority of the UFOs and the secret weapons. Four, the new Third Reich, which I refer to always as the Fourth Reich, maintained its crucial time technology advantage over World War II adversaries. They maintained it, and by the time this book was written, they possibly increased it. Five, idealism has triumphed over materialism in that the German state only was destroyed, but not the ideology of National Socialism. And six, finally, there is a 30-year cover-up by brain, or more often by brawn, of the true identity of where UFOs come from, their origins, and they have suppressed the unholy alliance of 1939 to 1945. The only real reason for the UFO cover-up, and this book was written a while back, and don't forget, when this was written, they didn't know that in 1982, of April 1982, the United States Supreme Court said you cannot have information on UFOs, it's national security. Everything on UFOs that you need to know is locked up. And what they wrote in this book on these secret weapons was the real and only reason for the insane UFO cover-up is to be found in the German origin. The Allies in the East and West have told so many lies, and now the Nazis are around, and it would be logical and natural for them to take revenge one day. We'll take a one-minute break and get back to this subject of the Falkland Islands, Argentine, and Antarctica.
This concludes the first half of World Watch.